Good morning and welcome to Good to Grow. I'm Norma Martinez.
And I'm Denise Rodriguez.
Well, Denise, today we have a really special guest. He is the West Texas Regional Urban Forester, Mickey Merritt. Welcome to Good to Grow, Mickey.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you are brand new to the region. I understand you came to us from Houston. How did you get to El Paso from Houston?
Well, our office is actually located in Alpine.
Uh-huh.
We have a pretty big region out here. We did have an office here in El Paso, and when that forester retired, we felt it was easier to service the entire region by relocating the office to a more central location. Huh. So we're based out of Alpine now, and it really helps for me to get out and meet with other communities and other people throughout the region.
West Texas is pretty broad compared to other parts of the state where I guess the communities are a little bit more compact. West Texas, you have three counties encompassing hundreds of miles. So how does that affect your travel?
Well, I have a lot more travel, I'll say that. But I like to tell people the Houston region had probably about 20% of the state's population, but about 2% of the state's landmass.
Oh. Right.
And the western region is almost exactly the opposite, with about 2% of the population and probably 20% of the landmass. So it's a lot more travel, but I'm getting to see a lot of the state. I really enjoy it.
Good.
So let's define maybe what an urban forester is, because those two terms together seem to be, they don't complement each other, I guess, when you think about them. They're a little contrary. Urban forester, you think of a forest, you think of trees and woods
wide
and deer
spaces.
And you think of urban, you think of city. So how do the two come together? What is an urban forester?
Well, we help communities and other organizations as well manage the trees within the community. We don't look at it as a single tree issue. All the trees within a community or within a park or whatever that location is make up the urban forest. We did a study in El Paso a couple of years ago that showed there were over 1 million trees in the city of El Paso. And that's a lot of trees, and that's a lot of benefits. And so by working with the community and helping them to understand what they have, the needs that they have, their maintenance needs, plus the benefits that they get from those trees, that's really urban forestry. I had a boss that used to say, urban forestry is managing trees where people live, work, and play. And that's pretty much anywhere.
Right. That's very true. And, you know, sometimes we kind of think about the Chihuahuan Desert, and there's a specific group of folks that kind of feel that trees in a desert area are kind of like a mix-match combination, when in reality we do have a lot of native trees in surrounding areas and our canyons and really great opportunities for fall color and a lot of diversity. And I found that our challenge always is try to incorporate that and bring that into the cities and into the suburban areas for people to really appreciate those trees and not just look out at the desert just as this flat sandy area full of creosote and mesquite.
Yeah, I'm having trouble in yeah. my own mind calling this a desert because it is a desert, but in the classic sense of the way I grew up thinking of a desert, the diversity here, the vegetative diversity here is just enormous. And to me, it's anything but a desert. And there are trees, there are shrubs, there are perennials, there are annuals, succulents, all these different vegetative species that are out there. So it's really unique, and trees are a part of that ecosystem.
I think that's a good thing to point out, because I think if we were to maybe let more people know that this isn't your typical desert, that might make them open their minds perhaps a little more to bringing in more variety into their landscapes. Because, you know, we're all told this is a Chihuahuan desert, but like you said, Mickey, this isn't like the Sahara, where it's just dunes right. and sand and nothing, maybe a cactus here and there.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's the overall plant palette that yeah. we have to work with as yeah. well. And one of the things that we always cover a lot on this show is the fact that the city is growing just, you know, out on the outskirts of the actual city itself and within the county. And we see all these homes being built and, you know, the trees are not being planted as much as we'd like to see that. And really to look at what those benefits that those trees come to a basic, you know, homeowner, to somebody that's buying their house, like, and they're thinking about landscaping, that is just much more than just the desert landscape, the barren rock and yucca trees. So,
well, developers, I think, might also be partly to blame for that because they clear out so much land. And so they leave you bare. And then they'll say, oh, but we'll landscape your house with the cost of the build. And instead, they just put rocks all over into the front and maybe an ocotillo. So maybe in that case, you may want to, if you are planning on perhaps buying a house on the outskirts that's just being built, maybe just let me do my own landscaping. You don't have to worry about throwing in the free landscaping with the rocks and the ocotillo. Let me plant a few trees.
Yeah, but you also have to be smart about the trees that you plant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we've learned in my experience in Houston is that we have people moving in from, you know, the Northwest or the Northeast. And they like their specific tree species up there. And so they bring them down here, and they just don't work. They bring them to the south, and they just don't work. They can't take the hot summers. So we have to really do a good job of educating the public. If you are going to plant trees in this desert environment, what species are more appropriate to be planted?
Right, exactly. And I think that we should look more at our small or even medium-sized trees because we always ultimately look at the mature size of those trees. And a lot of times these new houses that are being built are on the property of a postage stamp. So we're really limited on size that we have, and you don't want an overgrown tree, you know, in the wrong spot.
I like to tell people, pick the tree for the site. Know what type of site you have before you select your tree. So don't go to the nursery with a preconceived notion of what tree you want. Look at your site, know what type of tree your site can support, and then go from there.
I mean, from what you have seen in your time that you've been here, one of the questions that we get actually quite frequently is, what kind of tree should I plant? Have there been any species in particular that you find work best here than perhaps anywhere else, like maybe in Houston?
Obviously, the species that are more acclimated to the desert environment, we like to recommend native trees whenever possible. But sometimes in an environment like this, you're a little bit limited. I know a lot of people plant some of the Mediterranean pines. Afghan pine is one, Italian stone pine or Aleppo pine is another. And they have their place, and they do a fairly good job here. But I think that sometimes we overlook the proper native species that we could substitute instead of those introduced species.
So maybe like a desert willow or a honey mesquite?
Desert willow, honey mesquite, or if you want an evergreen, something like an alligator juniper, maybe even a Rocky Mountain juniper, trees like that.
Yes, because if I see another Italian cypress or a purple leaf plum in this town, I think we saturate that. It irks me. There's just so many other trees to be able to pick, and it's like the nursery industry and folks, they're just used to seeing these plants over and over again, and they're just complacent, and they just buy and they put it in there, and it's a waste of space. I'm sorry, it's a waste of space and a waste of water and time.
It's also, you know, demand. The nurseries are going to plant what people want. So it's really not demand, it's education on our part. Our job is to educate the public and get them looking for more diversity. What else can we plant out there? What natives can we plant that would be better for wildlife? Because if everybody's going in the nursery and saying, I want a Afghan pine or a Italian cypress, well, that's what they're going to carry.
Right.
So we need to do a good job of getting the word out that there are other species out there that can be planted.
Well, I think there's a really great poster that you had talked about in a past show that the West Texas Urban Forestry Council has published. That's a really terrific list of some trees that are appropriate to our region. And of course, you also have to keep in mind where in town that you live, because there's so many different soil types. If you're living in a sandy, well-draining region, one of the more riparian type trees, the types that do well maybe closer to the river, like an ash perhaps or a willow, they're not going to do so well on those far east sides of town where there is just the sand and rock.
Right, the deep sand. And yeah, to be able to have that tree for that long-term benefit, there's no way you're going to change your soil type. There's no way to change your soil pH. So it's really tailoring, like Mickey says, it's just to bring that good match to there. But, I mean, let's not overlook even something as simple as a Vitex. I know a couple of years ago, Texas was all on board with the Vitex, and they were all over the Nursery Association conference shows. everybody was hot on it. And in El Paso, we've had those for a long time. We have some really established Vitex trees. And I think, you know, just even looking at something simple like that, because in a way, it could almost be an accent. We're not looking at full shade coverage on that, but it's still going to have a substantial canopy to be able to have these benefits as far as cooling buildings and, you know, providing a nice little recreational space for folks.
Right. That's correct. There's nothing worse than seeing a, like a live oak planted in what you described earlier, a postage size lot.
Right.
Because the property owner in 10 or 15 years is going to be left with a pretty big expense, a maintenance expense for that tree. To me, it's misleading to have the builder or developer plant that tree in the front yard and use that as a selling point when eventually it's going to turn into a large headache for that property owner. So we need to, again, it all gets back to education, but the property owner, homeowner needs to take a look at the site and say, hey, really, can this tree or can this site support this tree? Maybe go with a smaller tree like a Mexican redbud, which would do really well out here.
And they have beautiful flowers in the spring.
Right.
Yeah, they're beautiful accent trees. And again, they don't get very large, but if you're looking for a really nice accent, I know a lot of people like to plant those in their parkways, depending on how wide those parkways are. We don't want to encourage too many tree plantings. And I've seen people plant cottonwoods in parkways,
right,
which is really sad.
Right.
Right tree for the right place. That's what we're
correct.
Trying to emphasize here.
Exactly. And the Mexican redbud is one of those first indicators of spring as well, because when those start blooming up, you're like, oh, it's starting to get warm again, which I know is exactly a nice little burst of color, especially during the dreary winter time. But there's also some nice evergreen trees as well. The Texas Mountain Laurel.
Oh,
it's a nice
that.
Evergreen mm-hmm. tree with some nice persistent seed pods as well.
It does very well here.
Multi-stem trunk. I mean, it's just an overall really great tree. And then it blooms once a year and we all enjoy that, those purple flowers.
Mm-hmm. And
so there's a lot of different options, I think, for folks to be able to look at. And I think that in our next show, we'll kind of talk about how to look for some trees and what kind of tools are out there for homeowners to start selecting some trees, especially during this time of the year.
I mean, and you're in the little time that we have left here, since you've been here in the region, has there been any one sort of type of tree or spot in El Paso that really stands out in your mind as like, this is what the rest of El Paso really sort of needs to grasp onto?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure I'm quite familiar enough with the city to point out a specific location or spot, but it's really so different because, like we were talking earlier, the soils are different, and up in the higher elevations it might be different, and towards the river you have the deeper soils and things like that.
So what's a good website that maybe people can visit if they want more information on what we've been talking about?
They can visit our website, texasforestservice.tamu.edu.
And that's TAMUS and Texas A&M.
Yes,
right?
Ma'am.
Correct.
Yes, ma'am.
We have a whole lot of information on there. I mean, you can spend a day just scrolling through a lot of the information on there. And it's really useful. It's good information. And there's one other website.
Sure.
The West Texas Urban Forestry Council, and that's WTUFC.org.
And I'm going to say that's probably where that poster is.
Yes, it is.
With all the recommended trees for our region. So again, I will link that to our website on the Good to Grow page at KTEP.org. Mickey Merritt is the West Texas Regional Urban Forester, and we're going to have you back again next week. So we're looking forward to that. Thank you, Mickey.
Okay, thank you.
We want to thank Felipe Talavera for engineering today's show and Evan Walsh for producing. I'm Norma Martinez.
And I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And remember, a gardener shadow is the best way to keep your garden good to grow.